The Africa Report first, every Tuesday just after 10 o'clock news. We get to interact with JJ Cornish. He's our Africa correspondent and he keeps a beady eye on the African continent and developments there. Or is it here? I get my language right. We're going to go to Rwanda, Chad and Sao Tome and Principe in a short while. Welcome, JJ Cornish. What's breaking on the African continent?
Bonjour to you. Well, always said that when South Africa's in the headlines with the George building, but the big story to my mind remains what is going to happen with Britain's plan to send Rwandan refugees that land there in small boats from safe countries to actually send them to Rwanda instead of processing them as asylum seekers in Britain. You know, there are 52,000 of such people that have been identified. And, of course, the Rwandans, Yolanda Moloko, the spokesperson, says we can't guarantee how many we will receive. You know, the refugees are costing Britain 93 billion rand a year, 185 million rand a day just in hotel costs. Rishi Sunak has promised to start moving them. But the fact is the Labour Party, who look like they will be the next government, for all money look like they're going to be the next government, have said, we reject this policy. So is Rishi Sunak actually going to get somebody to fly some of those there? You know that they have paid 8.5 billion rand to the Rwandans already, to take these in, and then there's a kind of a bonus system for everyone they take over a certain number. But I wouldn't want to bet on any of them ever getting there, because I think however he times the election, if he waits until January, I think the legal problems, because people being deported in this way are obviously going to appeal it, and the Supreme Court in Britain has said that it's unlawful to move them that way. Rishi Sunak's government passed legislation, the Safety of Rwanda bill. But do you know that just 2 years ago, they spoke about extrajudicial killings, deaths in custody, enforced disappearances, and torture? Well, 3 years ago, in fact, the UK government took Rwanda to task for that. And yet now, 3 years later, it is passing the Safety of Rwanda bill. It's just nonsense. It's pure hypocrisy, and it will be part of Sunak's legacy that he just denied centuries of British humanitarian tradition for short-term political gain, which has got him nothing.
Why is Rwanda agreeing to this particular idea? Is it just purely economics? Is it just money flowing?
8.5 billion already, and further money to come. So, I mean, and Rwanda, it's a pretty sharp country in terms of trying to look orderly and all of that, has the most parlous human rights record, but it is a poor country. So that money comes in very, very handy.
Yeah, I just don't understand it at all. But let's go to Chad. The first Sahel country to hold elections after the coup tsunami that has hit this troubled part of Africa. Are we normalizing then?
Yeah, well, there are, there have been seven coups in the last 3 years. Chad was one of them, you know. Debbie, he took over after his father was killed in action, 21. And his father, Idris Debbie, had ruled for 30 years. So now Debbie's trying to hang on. And he's changed the constitution. There has been constitutional referendum that will allow him to stay in case. But they voted on Monday, seem to be fairly orderly voting. But interestingly, the results will come out, provisional results, on May the 21st. And their final results on June the 5th, with our elections on May the 29th, are going to have results before those in Chad. But the boycott call from the opposition has already come, which is inevitable in African elections. They're saying there's been rigging. But the other countries, Guinea, Sudan, Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, Gabon, where they've had coups, none of them are showing any inclination to go to the polls. So this is seen as something potentially positive. But the opposition say, no, it is really Debbie's attempt to stay in power.
But take us to Chad. I mean, we got 5G, so we can communicate effectively and maybe turn around a result a lot quicker. I'm sure they don't have 5G covering all of Chad. It must be a huge logistical task.
Well, it is. And there are 8.5 million people voting. So, you know, that's not, it's not like the Indian election. But yeah, it would be a logistical task. And, you know, I mean, to so many of these African countries to see how they do it. And they follow guidelines from the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy in Africa, ISA, the former Electoral Institute of South Africa, set up to supervise and observe the South African elections way back at the start of democracy, and has gone on to many, 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 many countries. I've been to, I think, 13 with them now. And I don't know if they have elections. I haven't checked whether they have electoral observers there. Okay. From ISA. But the point is, there are guidelines, and it shouldn't be taking them this long. No doubt about it.
Okay, let's go to Sao Tome and Principe. They say they want reparations from Portugal because of colonialism. Tell us more.
Well, last week, at the 50th anniversary of the Carnation Revolution, the revolution that ended military rule in Portugal, the president, Da Souza, said we should be paying compensation for colonialism and for our part in the transatlantic slave trade, which where millions of Africans, they put a figure at millions of Africans were moved, most of them to Brazil, a former Portuguese colony at the time, onto the plantations there. There were 12 Portuguese colonies, eh? And then they eventually got independence very soon thereafter, including our neighboring Mozambique. I have to tell you this, Clarence, I boast, but I was the first South African journalist allowed back into independent Mozambique in 1976. I went with Andy Young to a seminar there, or to a seminar in support of the people of Namibia, Zimbabwe, and they called it Azania at the time, the South African thing. But anyway, it very interesting. And the Portuguese government has said, no, we have no intention of paying reparations because, you know, one doesn't know where those end. I mean, many people have apologized for those things. But when it comes to paying reparations, wow, it's huge numbers. I remember the Haitian president giving me the number that he said France owed them. And then I had the French on my neck saying, how dare you print a thing like that? It's absolute fantasy. And I said, well, you know, it was, in fact, it was the president who said it. I think I can quote the president. I mean, if you dispute it, dispute it. But I think I'm allowed to quote the president if he says so. Certainly, I quote your president if he says something without checking the numbers.
Just how do they do the numbers? Is it extractive practices back in the day costed at today's kind of exchange rate?
Exactly that. Okay. Exactly that. And that is why any government prepared to pay reparations is very, very cautious about it. And as I say, the Portuguese government, no, we have no intention of paying such things. And Da Souza saying, well, we really should think about this. You know, we should be doing it. And so we have now Sao Tome and Principe, fairly small colony, and their culture and education minister, Isabelle Abreu, has said, yeah, hands up, we're in line for that, we want that. We've started the process, it'll take some time. I think President de Souza is going to rue the words he spoke. Certainly he's made the far right wing in Portugal is saying this is a betrayal of the Portuguese people and their history, and he wants Parliament to absolutely step on Da Souza's neck on this matter. But it's going to make for some interesting coverage in the weeks and months ahead, I think.
Yeah. Do you think we should be writing a letter to the Dutch Prime Minister? What's his name? Mark Rutte. Should we be sending a little letter to King Charles due by you?
Well, we've got two people we can go on, so we can... we can get double reparations. And can you imagine, what are they going to charge? Well, I mean, Yeah, I wonder. I'd really like to know. Yeah, the billions. It would certainly help the whoever's trying to balance the books at the moment if we get just a little bit of that. Eh?
Oi! I'm a little worried about all of that money. Going into some hands, but. As always, thank you, JJ Cornish, our Africa correspondent with the Africa Report. And, yeah, some interesting stuff happening in Rwanda, Chad, Sao Tome and Principe. It is 10:19. Next up, we chat with Kelly Benito. She's the manager of the CCID Urban Management Department. We're going to talk about that small butt that is posing a big problem. And that cigarette butt, it's sickening, actually, because it's not biodegradable. And I look at people on the beach just chucking their cigarette butt on the beach. It's going to be there for a very, very long time. It's the other part that you can chuck around that's going to kind of just dissolve into the earth. But the butt is going to stick around for a long time. So if you're a smoker, be very aware that cigarette butt is probably going to be in our system for a lot longer than we are. Kelly Benito is going to talk about the challenge in the city of Cape Town in the urban center next.
Monday to Friday, from 9 a.m. This is Views and News with Clarence Ford.